My name is Zack Snyder, and you're listening to the Black Bar Podcast. On today's episode, I'm excited to bring on Spencer Jackson, a friend of mine who's been a massive source of support and encouragement through my years of ministry serving under his leadership at Lifehouse Church. Spencer just recently transitioned out of his role as creative director into the role of one of our campus pastors. And I thought it would be a great way to honor his transition by talking with him about five things he's learned over the past several years of leading a creative ministry team. He brings some great insight and plenty of his humor in his reflection on his time in this role. But before we hop into the conversation, I want to take a moment to tell you about an amazing service called Live Voice. Live Voice is the app for simple audio streaming right from your pocket. Live Voice works with any smartphone, tablet, or computer with a Wi-Fi or mobile internet connection and is an on-site, online hybrid service that makes interpretation and communication at your events extremely easy. With no technical expertise needed, you can manage everything from live translation services and guided tours to audio transmission and streaming for conferences, meetings, and online events. You provide the translator, they provide the service. Live Voice has super affordable pricing for a wide range of needs, and you can even sign up today completely free to see if it's right for you. Visit livevoice.io for more information, and be sure to use code BLKBAR for 10% off your first 3 months when you sign up through us. So while you pull up Live Voice on your phone, let's go ahead and hop into today's conversation with Spencer Jackson. Spence, thanks so much for joining us today, man.
Yeah, man. Thank you so much, Black Bar Podcast. This is a real privilege. I know who I'm talking to. I know the likes of where y'all have been in the past couple of months. And I'm ready to sink my teeth in and spit some black bars. Let's go. Let's go.
So I was just saying before we record this, it's funny to have Caleb and Spence in the room today because they're both surprisingly similar personalities, like how they approach things. For those who care about the Enneagram, Caleb's a 3 and Spence is a 9. So not exactly the most like...
But that's where I go in health.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I think that's where I go when I'm not doing well. So we got the opposite.
Let's go. Yeah, Caleb likes to turtle up. So he has his window moments. Yeah. So Spence knows those window moments. So today we're going to get into five things that Spencer learned as a creative director. Yeah. He's transitioning roles, as I mentioned in the intro. But before we hop in, Spence, I was hoping that we could get into a little bit of your background so the people that are listening can feel you a little bit better. So how the heck did you start in ministry? Why did you stay in ministry? And then now, why are you transitioning out of creative ministry specifically?
Yeah, no doubt. So I grew up in a faith home, grew up in a Christian home. I was just talking with somebody about this the other day. I remember the moment in an evening service, you know what I mean, where I said yes to Jesus at 6 years old, you know what I mean, and just been in church my whole life. And I definitely, I applaud that. Even in this day and age, our faith is touchy, you know what I mean? Like, there's no other way I'd rather have it. I'm thankful that I was set up to at least have something to go off of. Even if I was going to venture and experiment for myself, I'm glad I had something to go off of. But for me, Jesus, he's it, man. I got no qualms. And I really do love the concept of people finding their faith. I love religion. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's a beautiful idea. You know what I'm saying? And like, so I really have a lot of respect for people in their faith journey or none, you know what I mean? Cause I've experienced both. And, I love the church. And so I kind of got into ministry growing up in that. I got into ministry because, there comes this moment in your young adult life where you honestly got to own it a little bit more than just like your Sunday school class. See, I'm dating myself. We don't call it Sunday school no more. See, I went to church and it's called Sunday school. You know what I mean? Like, so, you know, you got to own it for yourself. And when that finally happened to me, I wanted to be a part of a strong youth ministry. So I looked around like other churches and, you know, I got inspired by them and I was like, but why can't it be happening in my church? So that was kind of like my first inkling of like in the youth ministry, I'll just be one of the teams that like help make this something. And from there I kind of got my first touch in ministry, plus also at the same time I was growing up in the church, I was growing up in hip-hop, which was like button heads, you know, genuinely love hip-hop and its culture, the good, the bad, the ugly, all of it. And so I was in this world of like, I want to do this, but if these people at my church knew that I was doing this, they'd be like, oh, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, and, but, you know, you hit the 2000s and it's like all starting to become like a thing. You know, like if metalheads can like, can hit Jesus, then so can the rap kids. You know what I mean? So, like,
right.
So, and there's this, and I joke about this all the time, but like, if you're anywhere near Christian rap, you have to serve in youth ministry in some capacity. It's somehow like, it's why it still happens to you now. Like, you could be 50 and like be in hip hop ministry and like, oh, what you're doing for the students is so wonderful. Y'all, I'm talking to 30-year-olds. Why y'all keep saying that? You know what I mean? Like, so I got involved in it that way, you know what I mean? And youth ministry was kind of like my first touch in it. And then I also served like in just like in group homes that were ministries, things like that. Like, youth really did kind of like drive a lot of it. When big turning point in my life, my wife got sick, mental illness, you know, like she had depression, and it was a really dark moment for us. I basically was home with her. Like, I don't remember how we were surviving. I may or may not sold cocaine. I don't know. I mean, I don't know how we were making it, but like somehow God was providing for us, but I was home with her. And sorry, Black Bar community, they don't condone that kind of stuff. I don't know if you guys are prepared for this. You know, I was still doing music at that time, wasn't really involved in ministry, and I went back to school for music. I wanted to get, like, there was pieces that I didn't understand. I wanted to make sure I understood music theory and music production, and, like, I thought that I was going to have a career in that. And, you know, while I was still pursuing that, you know, it was time to get my family back involved in church, and the church that I found, the current one that I'm at right now, Lifehouse, you know, I just really loved and appreciated. And so I was just with them, and I just was hanging around a lot. And, like, even when I finished college, I thought I was going to put... It's not like for the area that I live at, I thought that I was going to put some application into a record label and be like, hey, if you don't take me as an artist, how about as a producer? That just don't happen. So I was going to settle for even just like some kind of audio feel. Like, just let me just use these skills behind the board for something. I could do video too. I was like, maybe I was going to start my own business. So like, hey, I'll produce your video and give it original music, which is still a good concept. It just didn't work out that way, because what happened was ministry was there. Like, it was from the beginning, just like this annoying, you know, like, it's still here. And for some reason, I just said yes. Like, when opportunities arose at the church, I'm like, wait, why not? I love hanging here. I love these people. They see a value in my, like, in my hip hop artistry. Like, I appreciate that. You know what I mean? You know, like, and so that just kind of helped me lead into more yeses. And one yes just led to a bigger yes and a more committed yes, to the point where it went from like starting in like a first impressions leader in the staff to like, believe it was outreach I went into next. And then like it just kind of dawned on me that like this kind of position for leading the creative team was open, and I was like, wait a minute, that's what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm like, and it just kind of hit me. Like, I would have never even considered it, but like I was always a part of the creative team from my existence of my church. That's how I came into the team, making songs and doing things like that. And so I don't know why it took me kind of so long to be like, wait a minute, can I actually work on that team? Can I serve that team? And so through I'm not even sure how many years span. I think I've been there 6 years. I'm not sure, maybe longer. I don't even know. I'll let HR count, because you know, eventually when I get to 10 years, I'm allowed to take a sabbatical. So I do want somebody keeping count, but I can't remember anymore. But I ended up, you know, serving over the past couple of years in the what would be like the executive creative director. So I was serving on the executive team of the church. So you got your lead pastor and then his immediate next four staff. You know, and so I took care of the creative department, you know, the things that go in our services, marketing, communications, all those type of things. And it definitely has been the greatest job of my life. I'll call it a job, you know what I mean? But like career, all that, you know, it definitely to this day, you know, it's funny because I'll come to this later on as you guys kind of get to your questions, but it's like I wouldn't let myself own that for a while, that this is my career.
Yeah.
I don't know what that was. I don't know if it's because I wasn't planning on going that direction. I don't know. Maybe that's the reason why, but it took me a while to really like own and accept, like, this is what I'm doing. If I don't do anything else the rest of my life, this is it.
I think it's worth mentioning as well, while you were leading the team, you also started a ministry called Turntables. Would you give us a little brief on that too before we get into more questions?
Yeah, absolutely. Because that kind of plays a part in, it's going to come back up for sure. But obviously my heart for hip hop is that not only hip hop isn't only the music, it's a culture, you know what I mean? And so I was always going to make hip hop music. It didn't take me long before God pressed on my heart to like, Spence, listen. It's like he had his one-on-one one. He's like, even if you wanted to pretend that you were some G in the streets with a gun on your hip, like, you're not. Like, that's not you. Like, I know that a lot of artists you love are saying that, but you're going to have to come with something else. Like, you can't live up to that. And, like, I knew from, like, an early age in my teens, like, Spence, if you rap, you're going to have to be really who you are. And that is going to have to include God. It's going to have to include specifically Jesus. It's going to have to. And so I just kind of embraced that early on. But along with it came the tension of like, I don't like the fact that like, I got to turn off that switch. I got to turn off the hip hop genuine part of me when it's time to go to church because we sing something different. But I just always felt like, listen, if God can actually use the music, he can use the entire culture. I'm like, so, you know, could you do church like this? Mm-hmm. Could you have a church service? Yeah. And here's the biggest tension for me. Without it being this giant slice of cheese, like could it be real? Like, could it actually be? That. You know what I mean? Like, could it really be like, this is authentic hip hop? It doesn't matter who comes through the door. It doesn't even matter if non-hip hop people came through the door. If they come through the door, they know, yo, this is real.
Yeah.
Like, this is, you know, I don't even know what is happening here, but you guys are real at what you're doing and who you are, like that authentic, right? And so that's been a journey, and I would put a stamp on that of about, like, I would give it, like, 98, 99, like, the year, like, 1998, 99, like, right around I was graduating, dating myself again, like, that's what's been on my heart. It's like, I love church, but I am in two different worlds, and what if I didn't have to be? Like, what if my world stayed the same, you know? And so there's where that came from. And so I've been on a journey to kind of like build that into something. And it's been a long time. Like, there would be little along the timeline, little spurt here, I would try something, long time, little spurt here, I would try something. And so coming, what helped me, one of the things that helped me decide on whether my family was going to be a part of this church, Lifehouse, or not, was I looked at this church and I saw that they might get it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think this church might get it. They may actually, even if it's not who they are, essentially, they may be able to come alongside someone who sees something and go, that's the church. And that kind of helped me decide. And so all along that time, you know, I've been kind of building Turntables. So Turntables essentially is, it's a ministry, not a church, not a campus. Could be, who knows? It's still kind of like in its growing stages, but we provide music, content, and experiences. Our mission is to build the value of spirituality in hip hop. Again, not be some other alternative. We are really hip hop, and hip hop has values, but spirituality isn't necessarily the biggest one. It's there. It is there. It's look at some of our top people. They're playing around with this. They're crying out about it. It's just not the biggest value. You know what I mean? Like, it still can't compete with stripper poles and Lambos and that stuff's winning. It's just winning in hip hop. It is, like, but what I know is that won't last. You know what I mean? I think Jesus will. I think spirituality will. And so I want to just build that value. I don't want to come like, don't change hip hop. No, I ain't want y'all to do. I think there's another part y'all just don't have enough value and appreciation for. I just want to raise it a little bit. That's it. I want to do my part to raise it. Maybe people will find something they need out of that. Cause the other stuff that we do love about it, it's not working. It's not going to work forever. It's not going to work for peace. We know that. Like, it's even if someone never goes to a place of like, oh, I need God or I need the things that we value in hip hop will not last for anybody. They will leave you empty. So I want to do my part to build that. So we create content, we create music, we give experiences, worship experiences. We have online content where we're just trying to feed the hip hop culture through our voice, through our community. And it's open. You know what I mean? It's not like exclusive, like, yo, let me see your hip hop tats. No, like, yeah. Just come. Like, if you got any value or appreciation for this culture or any culture, like, you'll be fed through God through this. I guarantee you. You know, so
yes, I've been there, I've been there, and if you've seen me, then I'm not exactly a screaming hip hop from how I look. So,
but you get it, Zach.
Yeah. I got you.
But you get it.
So you went through all that, creative director, still running Turntables, but you decided to transition into a new role, equip one of the other leaders on our team to step up into a new leadership position. So that's been the current season.
So why don't you tell us about whatever, you mentioned you have five things that you learned while you were in a creative director position. I feel like there's probably a million
things
you learned while you were in a, as I definitely can share that. So why don't you give us the first thing of what you learned when you were in that role?
And before I start, like, Zach, just so you know, like, I am a creator for life, baby. Like, I'm not going to, because even for those listening, you know what I mean? They're like, no, I don't like these kind of podcasts. He's walking away from his calling. Why does God screw with people? Like,
I'm losing another one.
Like, nah, that's not it. That's not it at all. Like, I will die with a microphone in my hand or a ink pen, you know what I mean? Like, I will die creative for sure. But I have three things that really pertain to, like, the creative lead, like leading a creative team and being a creative. And then the final two were kind of like, they're really more personal. And now anybody can get something from this for sure, but I want to make sure that the other ones are really applicable to, like, the actual work. But I can't deny that, like, there was one that was pretty important, and then the final one was the most important, and it's what led to me realizing that, like, hey, it's probably time, you know? But the first thing is, This is like the best right here. Like, if you even think about being able to lead, like, a creative team, it sounds like you're an Avenger. It sounds almost too good to be true. Like, you're a creative. Someone's going to give you a job for it. And then you also get to, like, be this boss of it. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost too good to be true. And so I feel like when you recognize that, if you're someone leading a creative team, or you're leading even just, like, two people, like, it doesn't matter. Or even just, like, you don't have a team yet, but you're the, God bless you, but you're the sole creative person of whatever's needed for your organization, your business, you know, like, it's overwhelming to think that you get to do it at this level. And so I was very thankful, first of all, and still am, like, just super excited that I got to do it. And so one of the first things I wanted to make sure that I did is, since I did get to have a team, I had a great team. The first thing that I really wanted to make sure that I did was actually build a team. Like, I had the employees there, but, like, are we an actual team? And so the first thing I kind of say is, like, one tangible first thing you can do to make sure you start and actually leading a team is build a creative space. And it's so funny, like, while we were doing this, I was getting good affirmations from things that I was learning and looking around at and seeing, like, not even, like, prompts to do it, just check boxes, like, see, I knew it. I knew we needed to be doing this. And voices were crying out saying, listen, if you got creative people, they need a place to play, straight up. Like, you're not going to get ideas. You're not going to get oxygen and thriving unless, like, it is coming from a place that they believe in. And so if you have the resources or capabilities, maybe even it's mobile and you got to set up, like, temporarily or something like that, you gotta really, really own your space in a way that screams who you guys are. You guys are listening, some of you can't see, but I'm looking at Zach, like, in a space that we work in, and, like, I love looking in there and seeing, like, he's backlit. Like, I love it. Like, we were intentional about how we lit it. We were intentional about what it sounds like. We were intentional about, like, hiding the old church petitions with fake brick walls. Like, we did all that. Like, we just went in there and had a good time with it. And it sounds almost, like, trivial, but it's not. I truly believe that us owning our space led to very important things. I think that when you have ownership of your office, it'll lead to innovation of your auditorium. And that did that for us. It really did. The fact that we felt like we could change and have power over what something felt like in the space that we were in charge of, it gave us this belief that we could do it anywhere. We could do it in a video. We could do it in an auditorium. We could make the crowd do this. We could, if we did it from here, we know we have the power to transform things. And, you know, our mission statement, you know, kind of came out of, like, this whole owning who we are, you know, like, we never thought of having that for ourselves, but as a department, we felt like we needed a mission statement that all came from, like, creative ownership. And so one of the first things I learned early was, like, you have to work from a space that is just dope. You just do, you know, like, and I, whatever that means to you, if it means beanbag chairs or, you know, like, I don't care, but, like, creative people are intentionally different God designed us that. I believe that. I think God designed us that way. You know, like, if you have a team, if you have the resources, and again, it can even be done just clever, like setting the tone with the way the place sounds and smells. If you got a candle and a Bluetooth speaker and y'all got to meet somewhere, do it, because the tone that you set is going to lead into everything else that you do. And you're the creative. So bring art into your world, bring pictures, bring lights, bring sounds, bring designs, bring obscure. What is that? Who knows? I don't know, but isn't it cool? Bring it into the office.
Hey, and we're not sponsored by it, but the Chill Hop YouTube channel that's always got a live feed going, like, that is on probably 75% of the time in this room.
Is it the anime girl who's studying?
The anime girl, the raccoon that's walking? Yeah. Who are you? That is that scene. They put work into that scene. He literally walks across town. Like, come on, man.
I would definitely agree with that point. So when I got my job as the media marketing director at Grand Rapids First, the church I was at up until last year, it was at the time a department of three. And I walked in and I had my office. And then the other two people were on other sides of the building in completely different offices, right? It was completely separate. We met all together maybe three times a week. And it you know, they were very excited to, like, put me in my office. Like, we'll decorate it however you want or whatever. And my immediate response was like, no, like, leave this bare bone. And in 6 months or whenever we can justify it, we need to find a space where all of us can be together, that we can make it our space, where we can break down the walls. Because, like, meeting three times a week is not how creatives, you know, change the world. No. We need to be in the room all the time together, brainstorming, you know, collaborating, and making all that happen.
Even so, if you're not meeting.
It did happen. It took a few months to make it work, but, like, I honestly believe that collaborative open space was such a key to the secret to our success for such a long time.
I stamped that, and it really did, Caleb. I mean, it birthed the team. For a while, we were just wearing the name Creative Team. There was no team. And, you know, I mean, and so when you put a team together, what's the most exciting day? When the uniforms come and you get to open the box. And when we decorated the room, we had uniforms. You know what I mean? Like, now we were a squad.
Yeah.
Assembled.
So build that creative space, number one. That's the big starting one. Suspense, what's number two?
So, and as you build that creative space, now you got to lead like a team. You have to lead other individuals to create. And it's funny to think about that you got to lead somebody to create. But the difference between us being artists and having careers is there's something driving. There's a product demanding our work and our energy. And that in itself is an evil to the heart of the creative. You know what I mean? Like, there should be nothing in driving us to create. But if you want to get a paycheck to do it, you're going to, you know. And so... So how do you not contaminate the creative's heart and essence of, like, what they do and why they got into what the purity of, you know, what they want to create, why they do it, and still, like, drive deadlines and productions? And I think you have to be creative in how you lead. So if you're going to lead a creative team, you cannot just lead like any of your other supervisor counterparts. You know, like, there's other departments that maybe it works for them to do certain familiar office protocols or, you know, staff to employee things. I'm not speaking against it. What I'm saying is, if you're going to lead creatives to do what they do, I'm not clicheing the statement. You have to go outside of the box. You do. You really do. You have to be willing to do different things. And the challenge that I say that is because you're probably going to be given this liberty to do it, and other people may not understand it. And so you're going to have to be discreet and be humble and, you know, be a team player and explain, because other people who feel like maybe conventional methods is the only way you run an office, you know, like, is the way it's supposed to be done. And there's no why. What are you guys doing sitting outside? What does this tree have to do with your work? What do you mean you're going on a field trip? What do you mean you're taking a walk? You know, we've tried to build in a lot of practices that just are about us enjoying one another as a team, and we lead it towards the work. Most of the things that we do, someone could look at and just feel like, how does this actually connect to work? But when someone feels appreciated, you know, we just talked about today, we're behind on our staff appreciation. Like, we literally try to make sure that if we appreciate something that somebody did on the team, Zach, that that Wildest Dreams graphic, bro, it needs, somebody needs to pick it up and put it on their Chill Beach channel. Like, we write that. We write that out. Tell them how we appreciate the work he put into it. You know, Ridge, thank you so much for just innovating with those lights. I can't, you know, our place looks so good. We just write appreciations and we put them in this bucket. And then every quarter or so, we dump the bucket out. We just take a random pile. We read it about one another. And then, you know, one of them, I think we picked the first one or something like that. Somebody gets a gift card or something like that. You know, like, we just do things that breathe life into one another. And we, like, field trips, we do. Like, we've built into our calendar that we're going to take a field trip somewhere every year, that it's the place that we go is going to inspire us, challenge us, just invigorate us, you know, whatever. Like, fire needs oxygen. I know, Zach, who am I quoting right now? Who wrote
that's
the book?
That's Dr. Andrew Johnston.
Yes.
We've talked about him from Salt before.
Yes.
Fired Up is the book name.
Yeah. And like, the one of the main things I got from that book was definitely like, you got to breathe oxygen in like creative ways that you lead the team. It doesn't mean that you're never going to have to do supervisor moments and things. Like, I'm not creating this picture of just like, la, la, like, just no. Like, no, like even our critiques of one another, we do creatively. You know, even our challenges to one another, we do creatively. You know, when it is time to like raise the bar on what we're doing, you got to lead with inspiration and not dictation. You know what I mean? Like, you, they got to want to do their job. Again, maybe some jobs that's actually effective. Bro, what are you doing? 10 boxes a day, no less. Okay. I mean, even then I would still challenge it. Like, who wants to work for that? Like, no matter what you're doing, but especially if you're going to be leading a creative team, you have to do it with creative ways. You got to do it with creative ways. You have to.
If I'm not spoiling one of your future points, Spence, I think also you've done a good job modeling. You know, we as a team enjoy the Enneagram. We as a team enjoy learning resources. We as a team have recently started using The Working Genius from Carrie Newhoff. Like, identifying those areas that are that you love, and identifying those areas that you're weak in, and then being humble in the journey to try and figure both out. Especially you leading us through that, I think, is also a big component of leading and being led by a creative.
Absolutely.
I'd say the what you were talking about, like, fire needs oxygen to burn. And I think certainly there's a lot of issues with church culture in regards to creatives in general. But I think the lack of appreciation is probably the root of a lot of issues across the board for creative directors and the people in the positions. And finding ways to consistently show appreciation, even in small ways. Like, in my department, it was a stupid thing. We had a very, like, raggedy, I have it behind me somewhere, like a really trashy looking trophy called the Gregory Award. I don't even remember how it got its name. And it was essentially our MVP award, right? And whoever did something awesome that week or whatever got the Gregory Award, and the Gregory Award could only be handed out by the current holder of the Gregory Award. So it wasn't me just as a director that was in charge of showing appreciation and sending that all out. The department was constantly recognizing each other for the good works and the awesome stuff they were doing, and that thing moved around all the time, right? I think finding ways, even when you don't necessarily get the appreciation you should necessarily should be getting from your leadership or congregation or whatever else, the department needs to take responsibility of that and showing appreciation.
We know who we are and we know what we love about each other.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
And also leave it to Enneagram 3 to make a trophy for the department to be handing out.
You said Gregory? Is that what you said it was called?
The Gregory. I do not remember how it got. It's you know, I do remember it because it's a giraffe. It's a really awful looking giraffe. So we were thinking it's the, like, Jeffrey, the Toys R Us mascot,
but R.I.P.
it's the scuffed version. So it was the Gregory Award.
Yeah, no doubt. And I mean, that kind of leads into like the next one. Since you do have to manage a staff.
I am fascinated to hear how the Gregory scuffed giraffe award is going to lead it to your next to the second.
I didn't beat him. But you know what? I mean, I guess it kind of does, because it's about, it's leading off of like appreciation and like people. I guess what I meant was like the, you know, how we're leading them. You know what I mean? And this one kind of meets more of the road of like, all right, you could you could make a distinction between leading and managing. You could. If you're a manager, a supervisor, I feel like you're going to be the best one you can be if you are a leader. And we know that not all supervisors and managers are leaders. We know that they've been given or obtained a position. Doesn't mean they're not good at it, but there still is a difference between a leader. And like, and so this is one of the things I think can help you help someone understand the difference of when they're simply managing or supervising and when they're leading. And that is, you're going to have to pour into your people. This is going to be, it's going to be controversial, maybe. Okay, maybe that's too strong. It's going to be contested. Maybe there's going to be some tension in understanding this for some people. But you're going to have to pour into your people more than your projects. I think tangibly what that looks like is there's stuff you got to get done. There's a certain level it's got to be done at. Creativity takes a fuel on its own, even at its own pace, aside from the demand of timelines and bars that you got to hit. This is essentially Covey, I think, of sharpening the axe. I think this is essentially, you know, product capability versus, you know, like product. You get your product and your product capability, and your people, your creatives, they are your product capability. Like, they have to be the ones capable of pulling off what it is you need. And so at times, I think the project at hand could be asking for sometimes more than what maybe they can give, or it could be asking for more than what maybe even sometimes personally they understand or they're invested in or even agree with. And there may be times that the project that was supposed to be due at this time or given this component, maybe it doesn't happen intentionally because you needed to keep that effort or preserve that currency with that team member to win the bigger picture. It's almost like this battle may not get won right here with this particular project, but I can see that I need them in the long run. And maybe right now they need to not be running as fast because there's bigger things coming down the line. Or maybe this was a big one. Maybe this was, remember, we're talking Easter here in a church world. Maybe we're talking, you know, final quarter and whatever, you know, organization, you know, who knows? And you could win the project if you squeeze everything out of them, but you could lose them. And there are times in any in organizations in ministry or not that people have to leave, people make decisions. But I think it's your job to know when you want to fight to keep someone. You're the supervisor. Like, you got to know the difference between, like, it's, and just so we know, like, I'll put in perspective, I'll be fair here for anyone listening. I've never had to fire anyone. Have those tensions ever arisen that, like, you can see head down those paths? Absolutely. But I've never had to fire anyone. I have had to hire. I have had to transition people, but not like firing them. And I don't know in my time serving that, no one's ever looking forward to that. If I would have ever had to, yes, absolutely. But my mind was always set on, I will fight. This person's worth fighting to keep. You got to know the difference. That's one. And if they're worth fighting to keep, there will be times that you have to put them, their needs as a person, as a creative, as a human being. If we're talking ministry, as a child of God, this project, this isn't going to get this piece, or it's not going to get this level. We'll live to fight another day, but I want to fight with you. So what do we need to do here? You know, and like, you know, it looks like that's like almost like the worst case scenario. You know what I mean? It may, in the better cases, more easier, it may look like, hey, listen, hey, we're all on a team here. When you're in the creative meetings, ideas are everything. This is not going to get to the next level until we all throw out an idea. What do you think? What do you think? What do you think? And you're going to have to like navigate between, sometimes there are voices who just, they just seem like they don't miss a beat. They got it. They got the idea and they're adamant about it. They're going to lean in about it. They almost are even going to expect it to happen. And then there's another person on the team who they got good ideas too. And sometimes their ideas aren't always the best or won't exactly work, or maybe they don't see it quite yet, but you can't lose them as being one of the idea contributors. And you're going to have to be a voice in like a circle that kind of goes, hey, what do you think? And your intention, you have to insert yourself into the standoff. Now, that sounds bad. It's not a standoff that your teams fight one another, but you can see. There are two different ideas going on here. And what needs to win right now? The idea, or does this idea creator need a win right now? Like, and it sounds almost like manipulation, but it's not. Like, you know, like that goes for like selfishly achieving like your own purposes. This is for the sake of like, you got a team going on here. They all got to trust one another. Everybody needs to feel like they're contributing. Yeah, I know that this might actually work better, but you know, if we can actually do without it, this person's going to get to be the one that says what we're doing. They get to make the decision. Like, that was some of the things I felt like as a team lead, like, I looked forward to them. They were tensions that I looked forward to because I cared a lot about everybody that was on the team because I knew they belonged. It wasn't a matter of like somebody needed to go or transition out toxic. Like, I was so thankful that I didn't have to do any of that. Thank you, God. I had to do none of that. I would have, but that was never my thing. But I did have to manage team dynamics. And really what it came down to was like the only thing that was dividing us is like the project. The project itself of here, we got to do this and do this. It was causing like a divide of like what we're going to do. And you're never going to be able to avoid it. But at that time, there's just sometimes you're going to have to decide like, okay, the project does need to win here. But make sure you go connect with that person. Listen, that was a great idea. We're not wasting that. We're putting it away. I know we're going to have a spot for that. But then sometimes before the other team members, they actually got to appear to be like, listen, they have a good idea and it can work and we're going to do it. You know what I mean? And like, and so that was like some of the most delicate times of serving. And it was trying to determine, and this is for anyone listen, you're going to have to ask God for that wisdom. You're going to have to just like wait it out, understand your team. But there's going to come a time where you might have to choose your people over the project. When you see it, you'll know. And I encourage you, there will always be projects, but good people, there's not always going to be. They're hard to get and they're even harder to keep. So look at them first. You got to get the project done, bro. You got to do it. you're gonna have to. But some of them, you can, I think any supervisor over you who values you the same, which I hope is your case, is going to understand what you did. And they're going to back you. And they're going to know that if you do care about the project, you'll get it. You'll get the win where it's supposed to be. You'll get it. You'll find it. You'll get it. But the most important part is that team that you built and you're trying to build longevity. Longevity. Come on. That's never going away. Okay, I'm sorry, it's going away, but the value of and the importance of it is never going away, and it's something that you got to fight for, and it happens in the place where you're going to be a people-oriented person more than a project-driven person.
When I think back as my time as the media marketing director, consistently the hardest part of the job is like, keeping the bosses happy above you and also keeping the department happy below you, right? And that tension.
You're a punching bag, man. You're a punching bag.
You are going to get it on both
ends.
That's
my next point.
You know, at both ways, right? But specifically what you're talking about, advocating for your team and the individual members in it, within it and, above it and outside of it. When push comes to shove, I was always on the marketing team. I was always the leader of this team. Yeah. And I was going to make sure that they were protected, they were healthy. Because unhealthy people don't make good stuff.
They don't.
Right? Like you were saying, this could be read as a manipulative thing. Like, I'm just trying to keep him healthy enough to get me good stuff.
Right.
But that's not the difference between manipulation and influence is just your intent.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing.
Yep.
I want to get them healthy to make the best stuff so we can introduce the most people to Jesus.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the goal at the end of the day. And it's not always easy to do because Sunday's always coming. There's always work. There's always
it
another
It usually
project.
Comes right after Saturday.
right. In most my of the experience time, from, so far.
So Spence, we touched a little bit on your point there about the punching bag. Why don't you go and take us in then?
Yeah. I got smarter throughout like my time, and I'll even say I had been transparent with my team about like my feelings. And I think, as a supervisor, there is a line you have to make sure that in proper boundaries of where you can be vulnerable with them, express what you're going through as a human. And then you also have to you're not allowed to bleed on them. You're not allowed to you're the leader here. You got to take it, but I would use the illustration with them that listen, guys, early on, I really felt the punching bag tension. Because if two people were on either side of a punching bag, you hit it, it's going to swing towards them, they hit it back, it's going to swing back towards the other person, and you just ping pong with it all day long. So ping pong, sounds a lot more delightful. Punching a punching bag for the punching bag is not fun. Yeah. I guess it's not fun for the ball and ping pong either, but the little, it just sounds so delightful. I mean, like, he sounds like he's enjoying himself. A punching bag is like, oh my God, why are you hitting me? You know what I mean? Like, it's different. The last point, you know, I'm kind of talking about, you might have to do things like advocate for your team for one, within one another. You know what I mean? And the next point would be like, you're specifically, what helped me, I'm going to shout out another podcast. You guys are cool with it. But I listened to Craig Groeschel's podcast, and I needed his leadership podcast throughout my time. And I'll never forget the one that came through that was specifically about middle management, which is what I was in. You have a lead over you who's the boss, and then you got an entire team under you looking to you to not only deliver their wishes, but advocate for them as well. There's a part of me that definitely feels like the reason why my transition has so much peace attached to it and, you know, and clarity is because there was always a part of me that felt like I was going to be in that role for a season and for a very particular reason in the season. Shouting out the Enneagram, I am a 9, which is a peacemaker and a mediator. And our church, like many, had gone through its turbulence. If I'm being honest, it won't be the last. But we were going through probably the peak of like our worst experiences, I think, as a church, heading on 15, 16, 17 years. And the creative teams particularly was in a spot where if your lead pastor very much believes in what we're producing and he does have a creative itch, at least a little bit, like you're going to be close to him, you know what I mean? And high expectations and delivery. And we were there, but the team I felt like was hurting. I'll just say that from church life. You know what I mean? You could pinpoint it at any place, at any given time. Anybody could have a problem with the lead pastor. Anybody could have a problem with each other. Anybody could have a problem with the congregation. And they were valid. It wasn't just nitpicking. There was just like real feelings happening. It's kind of what happens when you put, around that time, Zach, we were probably like 2,000 people. It's probably what happens when you put a large community together in the same place and purpose. People are going to hate each other and have problems.
Yeah.
Tack faith onto it and it's going to get ugly. So that team was in a very unique spot when I got to step in and be more involved and become the lead. And through the course of time, I think I saw it early on. Like I was two different times, like two different mindsets. I was trying to be like, yeah, this is what I do. I get to be this creative executive. I'm going to retire from this. Like, this is great. But then it was also part of me is like, I don't know. I think I have a particular job to do because I could tell from all the conversations I was in. And so early on, I made sure that like, I absorbed most of the punches from my team. I let them punch the most because I knew that they were hoping that swing would swing back up towards our lead pastor.
Speaking like, if they could, as a member of that team, he took a lot of punches.
And by punches, I mean like they weren't attacks at me, but I had to be willing to like, if our lead pastor were in the room or our executive team were in the room, they would let loose on them right now. So I had to, you know, kind of like take it and, you know, like, and they knew, they trusted I'm going to deliver it forward. But like, it's not just that. It's not like the reason why it's a punching bag is the punching bag absorbs it and swings towards. So me absorbing it was being like, I had to take it, chew it up and like decide what has to go upward. Like what? That part that hurts. It's not the fact that they punched me. It's I got to absorb it. The absorber goes, I got to go. He needs to hear this. But that, they just needed to dump on me. They're just going to have to trust there. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like, which one do you choose? Which one, you know, you know, like, because then you'll develop your own as well. What are you going to take to him that you're frustrated about? But early on, I definitely feel like my mission was like, no, I'm going to get in here. And the last thing I do is I'm not going to let people leave this team, like, hurt. If they leave, God has to call them. Like, my only mission right now is, like, no one's leaving. As a matter of fact, we're doing just the opposite. They're moving us right now. I don't know if you guys know. So let's go. We're all going. Come on. We're going to make a room. Let's go. Boom, boom, boom. You know, like, and then most of the things I was bringing in, like, my one-on-ones with my lead pastor was, buddy, you don't understand this. You're not hearing this. You're not, you know, like a lot of that, you know what I mean? And so he had to take a lot, you know, and like, and God behind the scenes was working out things. in him, in us, you know what I mean? People did need to go. People needed just time for people to grow and go in healthy ways. There's some unhealthy ways that people needed to go, you know, and with it, some, you know, they took some of the pain that was, you know, kind of the team was absorbing. So I knew early on, the point I'm making is knowing when to do what. If the bag can control itself of how far to swing when it gets hit, that's what I'm telling you to do. Is if you got to be in the middle and absorb punches, what you do have control of is the amount of swing. You can tell yourself when it's time to swing back further this way or swing back further this way. And early on, I knew it was more important for me to swing back harder towards our lead passer and just be like, do you want to keep a team? Do you want to, you know what I mean? Like, here's what we got to do. Da, 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 da. I'll get to that. I promise you. Like, and then when I could see things being on the up, I could see teamship, sparks, let's play, successes. Yo, we did it. Like, when you could start to see all of that, then I knew it was time. I was like, all right, I'm going to go into my next one-on-one. And I know he's waiting to hear, hey, listen, I know you got a desire for this church. I got you. I'm going to start to swing back. I'm like, guys, we're ready. We can start. We know we're not done. We have enough, though, that when I would be like, listen, he wants to see this. We can do it. Come on. Let's believe in this. What's our problem with it? Okay, let's talk about it. Blah, blah, blah. Okay, we can own it. We'd own it. We'd go do it. Boom. Run into the next issue. You know, like, but now we were in a rhythm where it was a coach and an athlete training on the back, you know what I mean? Pushing it back and take it. It was now a healthy training to do this battle that was going to be awesome. But it all came from knowing when to advocate for who. You can't just be like, this is my team and I'll die for them. Well, you will die. He'll fire you. you can't just like, you're going to die. You know what I mean? Like, no. Like, lead them into something. And if you're in ministry, particularly, like, you got to trust that the guy at the top is the one whose heart is to be the guy at the bottom. And it says his heart. His heart is to be the lead servant. Even if he's sitting at the top, his heart is to flip the pyramid. And I empathize with anybody. Maybe you're feeling like that's not your case. We all look at the next leader up, and it's easy for us to cast judgment and to cast whatever about their predicament and make the, oh no, we know what we would do if we were in charge. All that stuff. Like, I get that. You don't work for them. You work for God. If you're in ministry, I'm talking to ministry people. I get it. It's probably a different world in any other capacity. I know this is a church-based podcast, but I hope you guys get audiences that are just learning creative techniques from geniuses like you guys. And so, like, for anybody who maybe this isn't your world, but your attention's in, like, your supervisor, like, I don't have a quick response for that. The nature that we work in a ministry directly is working for what we believe the work of God. But I do know that people in their proper callings are following just as much as God's plan for this world to be a great place. And so to anyone who, like, you're concerned about that with your leader, I would encourage you to get counseling about it, to get leadership coaching about it. Maybe even to build the courage to lead upward toward that supervisor. You know, who knows what conversations may come. I have no idea. But if it's burning in your heart that something is not right, like, you're going to run into, like, this place of, if you have the power to do something, you're going to want to. And you should. And you absolutely should. And just do it the right way. And for those of us in ministry, we have this fail safe of, like, wait a minute. Even if this dude or woman who's leading the church, I feel like is not doing it right, you got to trust that they hear from God. They're seeking him just like you are. He's not going to let this implode on the failure of, like, just foolishness or lack of communication. Or, you know what I mean? Like, he's not going to let it break on something stupid like that. It's going to take something. If the church goes down, if your church goes down, something terrible took it. I'm telling you right now. And who knows? Even part of that could have been God's plan. I'm preaching now. Now I'm doing my other hat. Let me get out of that. I'm sorry. But in that place of middle management, particularly in ministry, knowing when to advocate for who is going to be really important, and you're going to have to ask God about which one it is, and He will. He'll let you see. He'll let you see pains or possibilities that you know will indicate to you when it's time to advocate for who. And one day, more than once, you'll be in this really sweet spot between the two of them. I'm not going to say that they're all the time, but they are worth the back and forth. They are, very much.
not having sit in that position, I know both of you has, it feels like the bottom line is that require a lot of grace.
It does.
To sit in your position, yeah. You know.
It's a grace position, for sure.
One thing that we used to do every month or so is we would have all of the department heads in one big meeting, all once a month, and just talk about like general church-wide stuff. And often hearing in that meeting how much stuff is happening at the church. I mean, at my church was, I think we had 16 pastors at the time. I was there. There's a lot of departments in that building. And hearing all of these departments doing all of these different things and the senior pastor, executive leadership team having to make decisions about all of that at one time. And I'm just this one tiny little, I mean, this is my whole world, but it's only one tiny little slice of my pastor's world, right? And understanding that he is balancing things that I don't even, yeah. I'm not aware of, yeah. I can't even comprehend, helps like so much when we end up disagreeing on something and he goes another way, I've got to trust to some extent, yes, yeah. obviously that he's hearing from God and but he knows something I don't.
Yeah, yeah.
And my job is to be an advisor, but at the end of the day, you know, like, I'm on his team. He's yeah. my leader. He's yeah. my pastor, and we're going to make it happen. And that's not easy to do, to sort of swallow it, especially when you've got a whole team behind you that agrees with you and says, you know, we should lead the crusade or whatever. But, you know, that's he's the pastor. He's the leader. We're following him, and we're, you know, we're yeah. making it happen. So
that's good.
So on that note, you know, we're nearing the end of the conversation. We're hitting your number one. Spence, what's the last thing? I don't know if this is the most important thing to you or not, but what is the last thing you have to share with us about what you've learned as a creative director?
I learned that I quit. There it is.
You heard it here, folks.
Amen.
Spencer's quitting. And so far in today's conversation, he's talked about stripper poles and cocaine. So we're going, we're just.
Dude, don't write those rap guys onto your podcast, dog. I am transitioning, right? Like, I've always had a dual role. Some of you can, you know that in the church world, you don't just have one job title, you have a couple. So mine has always been recently, since I've been in the creative department, the Hagerstown campus pastor. That's our primary campus where we broadcast from, and the creative director. And but the campus pastor part, really, my job entailed, like, I'm going to get up on the weekends and do what I can do in my sleep, which is give me a microphone. I got this. Like, you know, like, that's not pastoring at any means, like, and so I really wasn't doing my job, but because this one demanded every ounce of me. So saying that I'm I had to make this decision where it's time for me to step out, the most important thing I learned about being in this role is that there is no position or no role more important than truly being who you are. Now, that's not to say that this job forced me to be someone that I'm not. I wouldn't have ran to it with such enthusiasm. I truly got to be who I was. But when you're being who you are, you grow. And that person grows and changes, and you essentially become someone else. You know, the newer, better, grown version, wiser of yourself. I'd always been in some tensions for a while in this role anyway. One, I'm not actually a campus pastor. I'm not generally connecting with people. I'm not going beyond the stage. I can't. I don't have the capacity. But here we are getting ready to plant new campuses, and the other guy who that normally falls back on, he's getting ready to leave. So there's a big hole there, you know. Means for new staff isn't just like something that was right there, especially something like a campus pastor position. It can't just be for us. No offense to anyone, how your hiring process is. For us, we've seen the most success hiring from within. You know, people volunteer, just want to be around our church. They end up getting, that's how I got my job. I liked my church and liked being around it. And then the job, I fell into it, you know. And I said earlier that there was this part that I didn't really accept. It's almost like I told myself I'm doing ministry for now, because it's not like this is what I intended on doing. So I'm just kind of like here doing this. Never really let myself like own it and become it. But I had to recently. I kind of made the final decision. I probably been like thinking about this for over a year, like solidly. Like, what would this look like if I didn't do this? So that was a long thought. Just so you know, it wasn't just like it's a big job, so it's not something that I just could get out of easily. I had always kind of seen myself in this role is I would definitely credit myself with being a great leader. That's not with pride or like a bunch of, you know, like I think I am. I think I care enough about people and adding value to them that I would give myself that stamp. But it doesn't mean that I was always a great supervisor. And the tensions about, like, I feel like even saying creative executive or creative director is like the two sides of the brains, like saying, no, doing the Spider-Man, like pointing at one another, like, what are you talking about? It's me, like fighting with one another. Like, I feel like that's what it is. And I ran into that the most, but like, I realized that, like, if I'm going to be a better supervisor, now we're getting into the weeds, like managing and like, you know, like all, you know, you do have employees at the end of the day. You have to carry out what's needed out of them. And, that was always my biggest tension, is that not feeling that I couldn't do it, I felt like I had to grow into a different version of me to do it. And when I realized I either had to grow or go, is what I kept telling myself, essentially, you either have to grow into this. Not like maturity or, you know what I mean? Like, I know I've said some things on the show that like, no, it's maturity, dog. You need to mature. Grow. Like, you know, like understanding like the next level of like, you got to let these things go or grow into this. And like, and I just honestly didn't know if I wanted to, you know, it sounds like, duh, that's stupid. What do you mean? Like, you're saying like not grow up. No, that's not. That's not what I mean. Like, your job isn't who you are. You know, never. That's not it. You know, and the grow or go is what was really pressing on me, because what I could see is that I felt like as I looked around at the team I've been blessed with, I think I saw in someone who was bright eyed, willing to take that part on. And so for me, I said, you're either going to grow and become that, or you're going to get out of the way and let someone have a chance at this that's probably going to do it better than you. And there's, so you can already see the tension in that. Why I said this main point, this final point is like, listen, there's nothing more important than you being who you are. I finally had that, like, it's okay that I say, no, I'm doing ministry. This is what I'm doing. Like, this isn't like what I'm doing for now. This is what I'm doing, because what I had to come to in my heart was this settling of, Spence, you are a pastor. Not your role, not your job. Like, you are. Look at how you are with people. Look at what you do with them. Like, look at what really ignites you when you get, like, you are a pastor. So why not live the dream and actually let your job, like, be what you are? Not everybody gets to do that. You know, like, and again, that's not saying like that who you are is like the role that you do. I had to look and be like, you're missing a great opportunity here to be like, go maximize what you're actually your best at more. It will benefit your church more if you do more of what you're actually the best at. Not best in people, like for you, the skills you're actually better at. What if you were doing them more on a higher level? You know, like, because when I look back at what I enjoyed the most about leading the team, it was pastoring them. It was the one-on-ones. It was the conversations that weren't even like about work. It was about them. I would leave them discussions all the time feeling like, man, I might mess up a lot of stuff. And in my head, I probably didn't say mess. I probably said another word. I might mess up a lot of stuff. But the one thing I will get right is I'm going to be there for people and the best that I can. I won't just flatter them. I won't just pacify them. I will really be there for them. I'll tell them hard things. I'll redirect them. I'll speak life into them. And that's what I realized. I was like, so I got to get over this fact that, like, yeah, I might walk away from this position that, like, has the most, if I'm being transparent, of any kind of pride, like that has the most prestige attached to it that I'll probably ever achieve. Creative executive. Wow. I quit. What an idiot. You know, like, but I, and the end of the day, it was that. It was like, no, I need to go be who I am, because I see someone else who's being who they are, and they're actually showing the greater potential to give this role. I think this person that is moving into it, minimum, has 2 decades on her of this specific role. Or if not, like a handoff where she's overseeing, you know what I mean? You know, like I believe that 100%. And I would not want to stand in the way of that. So I'm glad that I kind of like, in the end, like as I said, like my journey concludes with leaving it. But that role let me learn a lot about myself. And I'm glad that I got to find myself in it and that myself didn't have to be attached to staying in the position. It's much more justice to everyone that I know who I am and what I could go do better. For anybody who is toying around with, have you reached? You know what I mean? I would just kind of challenge you with, are you ready? Are you genuinely being yourself? And if your position is pressing against something to change, is that a change you know is right? Is that a change that you know is genuinely still going to be you when you make the change? Are you going to be happy with yourself? Like, are you going to be proud of yourself that you made this change if you have to do it to keep going further in this role? And if not, it's totally okay. Take your time with it. Take your time. Still give it your all while you're in it. But it's totally okay if you start to ask yourself and ask God, should I be looking at myself another way?
I mean, knowing when to leave, it might be the hardest part of doing ministry as a whole. I know for myself, when you're talking about growing and going and everything, I think one of the signs for me of knowing when it was time to leave is to see all the areas that I felt I still needed to grow in, and realizing that the job that I had at the time weren't providing me opportunities to do that.
Yeah.
I had already grown in the ways that the job was going to stretch me in, you know, not to say I would, like, I'd 100%ed it, like I had perfected being a creative director or whatever. Certainly, I don't think anybody does, but the areas that I felt like, you know, I needed to continue to develop in, and I think required me to make a change, and that ended up being my job.
Yeah.
Certainly, it's our job to continue to be developing and growing as people, right? That's sure. on us, not necessarily our job or surroundings or anything like that. But for me, in order to do that, that meant challenging myself in leaving and yeah. starting my own thing, and, yeah. and you know, figuring out how to do what my admin was taking care of for me, and figuring out, you know, what my designer, what my video person was. And that was just my next stage of evolution in my career and in my ministry, and as a just in my character of who I was. And realizing that my job was no longer developing me like it was at the beginning. Meant, like, if I don't want to, I don't want to peak here. This isn't the best I want to be, right? I need to find whatever that next challenge is. And that was really helpful for me.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm being full disclosure, in my journey of, like, fighting through all that, like deciding who I am and what I'm going to do, the possibility of not being where I'm at all had to come up.
Sure.
Do I need to leave this place?
Right.
To help these solutions, you know what I mean? And I'm glad that what God pressed on my heart was, no, it's not that. You can be done with this. Your next level, just shift over. Get out of the way. Go over here. And I'm really thankful to God for that. And again, I would press big decisions like that. I would just press, let it bake. It is a slow cooker recipe. It's not a skillet. Let it bake. Just let it simmer. Let it just wait. You don't have to move fast. I really believe that the be still and know that I'm God in this context is that, like, in this case, inaction is not inaction. You know what I mean? Like, in this case of be still, that is not a matter of not doing something. It is doing the best thing you can do, which is keep your butt still. If you're not sure what to do,
right,
there's a God around you, within you, somewhere moving when you don't have to. Just don't move. Stay here. Be fully invested. Give it time. It'll come. It'll and the dish that comes out of a slow cooker. Come on, name one bad thing that comes out of a slow cooker. Come on, dog. It falls off the bone. Everything, whatever you got in there. You know, like, so let the slow cooker do its thing.
So Spence, to land out the conversation, I know it's hard to summarize everything that you said today, but can you give us, like, the one sentence version of each of your main points, just to recap and close out today?
Yeah, no, first of all, if you're leading a creative team, the places you work from is very important. So build a creative team, build a creative space to work from. Absolutely. And then from that space, lead creatively. You don't have to follow the same rules of conventional supervision. You know what I mean? Like, you're creating something different here. Play outside. Definitely lead creatively. Pour into your people more, and sometimes before the project itself. Pour into them, pour into people, pour into your team. More than you pour into the project, you will get the project that will exceed beyond your expectations if you pour into them, for sure. If you're in the middle management place from the spot that you're at, you got to know when. Know when and how much to advocate for each side. You're in between. You got expectations coming from up top and you got complaints coming from below. You got to know when to do that, because it is a matter of when and about how much. And then in the end, no matter how long you serve in the role that you're in, it could be for the rest of your life. I hope you get to retire from it. I thought I was going to. You know, maybe I will. Maybe I'll circle back. I don't know. But in the end, no role or position is more important than knowing who you truly are. And if those are not aligning, that's okay. But you got some cooking to do.
Well, thanks for sharing all that, man. I feel like, in a weird roundabout way, this is a bit cathartic going through this, at least for myself. I know Caleb wasn't part of this story, but it was a fun link going through all those different things as it related to your story. So thanks for sharing that, man.
Yeah, man. Thank you, Black Bar. I think this is a genius podcast. I think you guys providing both wins and scars is exactly what like creatives need, because we're bleeding people. You know what I mean? Like everything we make is attached to our heart. And if you critique it, I'm going to bleed out in front of you. You know what I'm saying? You know, like, and then, you know, but the joy that we get to do of creating things, like, man, we want to know other people are doing it. We want to know that they got the ideas. We want to learn from it. And so I think what you guys are doing is incredible. And I'm really proud of the black bar that you have raised. Your blackness is just blowing my mind. I love this.
I'm not touching
the month of February. The month of February, my favorite month. I'm proud of the Black Bar Podcast raising the bar for blackness. Let's go, baby. That's all you're missing is a black dude. I mean, if we're keeping it token, that's all you're missing from the show.
It's been brought up.
So you just promote us on our own show. We appreciate it, but we always build time for all of our guests at the end for their own shameless self-promotion.
Oh, man.
Is there anything that you do that you want to promote today to finish out the conversation?
I have a single out right now called Lover and Fighter. I'm really proud of it. You can find it on any of the streaming sites, download.
And your stream name is Spence for Hire, so that's your artist name.
Yeah, Spence for Hire is the artist name
but
I
the
go
number
by.
Four.
Yep, Spence, number four, Hire. And website is Spence4H.com. You can check it out there, absolutely. And I'm going to give you the same version of me in that music that you got from this podcast. So that either is going to turn you away from it or it's going to make you want to run towards it. I don't do cocaine in my music. I know I said that, but I ain't never been nowhere near the stuff. My drug is purely Jesus, you know what I mean? And it comes out in my music. But this song is about if you love those you love, you know, like the people you love in your life, including God, you gotta fight for them. You gotta be willing to do the hard conversations, do the tough things. Love it does not come easy. You gotta fight for it. It's worth fighting for, and you gotta fight for it.
There is a woman I love. I give her all my love. Patient with time, gentle and kind, cause I wanna live by love. There is a woman I love. She cannot deny my love. I'll be right by her side, protect her life. So don't you ever try my love.
No, cause if it's a question of her safety, the safety is off. Any attempt to break my lady, I'm breaking you off. Now granted, in my profession, you think me as soft, but I'll solidify the granite and take you with loss. When I told her to death do us, that's just what I meant. So you trying to bring death to us, I'll have to prevent. I ain't a man of silence or a man of violence. So don't you push me to the ladder trying to violate my queen, your highness.
There's some young people I love. I give them all my love. Teach them to be wise and to despise anything that defies love. There's some young people I love. They cannot deny my love. Right by their side, protect their lives. Don't you ever try my love.
Okay, come near my kizzies and get yourself twisted. It ain't nothing to twist your cat like a bottle of fizzy. If it's my youngins, you will never be asking where is it. You thought mama bear was vicious, but papa go grizzly. I will pop up on you, drop on you, won't have to miss me. They the apple of my eye, so I'll die, can't convince me. Otherwise, I advise you to keep moving quickly. Cause I don't know if I can stop the Bruce Banner within me.
be up in the ring fighting over who God is. You know I'm the lord of every ring, so just sing on my process and let it ring throughout your life. That's the fight of the progress. You fight for the one that you gave a ring to and promised, and fight for your children to live a life that is honest. Cause honestly, you obviously would fight for their lives, but I need you to be the one fighting forwards inside. Cause there's a war going on inside they can't be saved from. Only blow you gotta throw is to say something. Fight against the one who will lie and tell him anything just to see him die. Fight for the fight of their soul. Fight for the spiritual control. And if you fight in this ring, you gotta wear my gloves. My left hand throws truth, and on my right is love. It ain't always hugs and